I was just telling everybody, John, that I really think that your vote is something that I can understand.
Yeah.
So I'm not bringing you on the show to have you defend your vote necessarily, but explain your vote as to why it was that you went with Scherzer.
Sure. I'll preface it by saying it wasn't an easy decision. I spent hours, looking over stuff. I have the MLB extra innings package, so I looked at, I watched each of his last five starts, and I watched Scherzer's starts, and I was torn. I was really torn, between 18 wins, which I value wins, over performance, and a 1.7 ERA is nothing to be sneezed at, to be overlooked. I mean, that it's tremendous. But I had a nice talk with Randy Jones up in the press box, and I asked him what he thought, and he said, "You know what? You got to win. If your team gets you one run, you got to throw a shutout. If they get you two runs, you can give up one. If they give you three runs, you can give up two." And he said, "You have to find a way to win for your ball club, no matter what the run support is." And that was kind of the tiebreaker in my mind, because and 300 strikeouts, which is historic as some of the historic numbers that DeGrom put up. Only 17 pitchers since 1900 have struck out 300 batters in a season. So there was a lot to consider, but it came down to is 18 wins versus 10.
Now, John, is it, based on the way the game is looked at now, did that factor into your decision at all? Because I think, based on looking at how everybody voted, this seems to be a lot of people in the camp that for starting pitcher, wins don't matter as much, or at least they don't look at them the same like they used to, like somebody like RJ does. Did that factor in at all?
It obviously it does now, Tony. I mean, when you look at it, and I honestly thought, and I've had several writers from around the country reach out, and I honestly thought Scherzer would get 5 to 7 first place votes.
Yeah, I did too.
And that DeGrom would win it, because that was the way things were going. But I thought Scherzer would get some support. But I think you're exactly right. Is everybody kind of looked at analytics?
Yeah.
And they in the modern game, wins don't matter as much as the other numbers that you're putting up. And I'll tell you, the Mets did a tremendous job in putting out information on DeGrom.
Yeah,
they were bombarding you every week with numbers, and which is what I would have done if I was on their media relations department. That's exactly what I would have done. But you're right. I think this is more analytic than it's ever been.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. John Matthews, our guest, a well-respected baseball guy, one of our favorites here in San Diego, works for the Union Tribune, joining us on 97.3 The Fan. One other thing, John, I'm going to throw this out just so you have it in your hip pocket. I don't know if you saw this, but somebody tweeted this today, that the Mets' record when DeGrom started this year was 14-18 as a team. That was the same record that the White Sox had this year when Lucas Giolotto started, and Giolotto had the highest ERA in all of baseball at 6.39, yet his team's record was 14-18 when he pitched. I'm throwing that out to give you a little more ammunition, because I think you have a case here, and I'm not upset that DeGrom won the award, but I am upset that anybody, especially those people in New York, although I have to consider the source,
right,
that some of the people in New York were upset, and you're probably getting a lot of hate mail from that part of the country right now. I mean, don't worry about stuff like that, because I think your decision made a lot of sense.
Well, thank you, and that is good information. And believe me, I probably have 50 emails from, and I'm learning new words and new combination of words. I didn't know you could use some of these words in combinations like this.
John, but I can relate, because I made the mistake of trying to defend Chase Utley in that playoffs a few years ago.
Oh,
and
boy.
My Twitter feed was just crushed with people. And I didn't even know you could go as low as some of these people were going. But yeah. I learned real quickly that you don't mess with a New Yorker.
It's unbelievable, Ty. And it's great to have your opinion. And it's great to be a fan.
Yeah.
And to support your guy. That that's what the game's all about. But God, have some civility.
right. Well, I listen, as we're sitting here and we're talking about DeGrom and Scherzer, was there anything else that you may felt like that made the vote that you haven't really gotten to yet in this interview that you want people to know as far as why you went the route you went?
No, not really. I mean, the one thing that I really like about Scherzer is that he's such a bulldog.
Yeah.
He's what, having played the game, and probably not very well, but, and being a catcher, I loved pitchers who were bulldogs and who took the ball and were able to, to hold velocity late into games and, were able to throw a fastball at the letters by you in the eighth inning. I love his mound presence.
Yeah.
And not that DeGrom doesn't have it, but I think Scherzer has a little more of it. He's just he's just, like I said, he's just a bulldog.
Well, I'm proud of you, John. I really am. I usually wind up the lone guy in arguments. It happens all the time, even on this show. I lose to all these guys and all the phone callers. So I'm proud of you just making your vote. And you have reasons behind why you did your vote. It's not like you just flipped it out there to create controversy. Now, did you hear that the NL MVP award that went to Christian Yelich today, there was also only one vote against him?
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
So there was only one vote that didn't vote for Christian Yelich. We're assuming you didn't get to vote in the MVP race as well, right?
No, you only get to vote in one major award. So I should reach out to whoever that one person was. And
whoever it is will probably reach out to you before too long.
Well, fortunately for whoever it is, Milwaukee's, they tread a little lighter than New Yorkers do.
They do.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
Just let everyone know, whenever I hear the open, I do the devil horns, and I do a good job. When I don't do the devil horns, I don't do a good job. Devil horns today.
Oh, Lord, he's just setting himself up for failure right here. Here we go.
Number five.
Have you guys heard about what happened with a Detroit Tigers stadium worker who was involved with a pizza incident during the season?
Oh, yes, I did see that. That was
Chris,
disgusting.
Did you hear about this?
I'm back. Sorry. I was paused from the show for a moment. For those who don't know, I'm broadcasting from Anaheim today. And we're having a little technical difficulty, but I am back. Go ahead. Sorry.
All right. Start it all over. No, I'm just kidding, Thomas. The Detroit Tigers stadium worker who was caught on video spitting on pizza meant for customers at Comerica Park has received his punishment from the courts. According to the Associated Press, 21-year-old Jalen Curley was sentenced to 18 months probation on Thursday for his pizza spitting incident. He is not allowed to work around food during his probation, which seems more than appropriate considering the crime.
You think?
Or I would say the rest of his life.
Right.
Curley was also ordered to attend anger management classes, and in my opinion, this is not enough whatsoever. So I'm going to start with you, Tony. Do you think this individual should have gone to jail for this act?
Jail.
Think about how many times he's done this.
I'm not going to guess. I'm not going to just make up stuff there, Scraby.
He's done it a million times.
No, I think this is suffice. Maybe you could have gave him a little longer probation. Maybe made the probation a little worse, but I don't know if you deserve jail time.
Really? Okay. Chris, what do you think?
My first thought was jail time. I have to
be honest with you.
But...
Oh, God.
I'm throwing a butt in there. I think our jails are probably a little bit overcrowded as it is.
Right.
And we probably don't need these guys in jail. But if there was a probation period that could be longer...
Yes.
I would have recommended that. Like, can you do like a lifetime probation where the guy can just never be around?
I think it's called parole.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
mean, that to me is the probation that I would think would be fair in this case, because what this guy did is really
disgusting.
A sickening act.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It's a sickening act. And, you know, to take advantage of people like that who have no idea that, that's happening. I think 18 months actually is a little light.
It is light, yes.
I just don't know if I would go jail just because we got some serious criminals who belong
we
there.
We do. But do you think the stupidity of filming it should change it at all? Because you're an idiot to film
that. The stupidity part is looking at the guy who had the camera.
What's this?
And just going through with the thought process he had.
God, well, this is disgusting.
It was disgusting. I thought it could have given him a little longer probation for sure.
You know what?
Number four.
Now that I know that he was looking at the guy who was filming him,
put him
I
in
say
jail.
Behead the guy.
Oh, behead him! Oh man,
taking it back to the back in the back days.
Wow,
that yeah, guy. Let's go to the dark ages.
That guy crazy, but I love it. This is what the Big Five is about. All right, number four. The Floyd Mayweather boxing match in Japan was called off a week ago. But not anymore. Mayweather today told TMZ he's in line to fight Nasukawa in a, quote, little boxing exhibition with no kicks allowed. Mayweather said, quote, I'm moving around with the guy for 9 minutes, and of course it's going to be the highest paid exhibition ever. So simply, I'm going to ask you guys this, and Chris, you're up first. Do you care about Floyd Mayweather anymore?
Oh, yeah, I think I care about Floyd Mayweather, but I don't care about exhibition stuff anymore. I put it that way. I think, you know, look, if he's going to get in the ring and he's going to fight, I'm not a big enough boxing fan that I find Floyd Mayweather fun to watch because I don't get into the science of the sport as others do. But I'm not tired of hearing about him. He's one of the greatest technical fighters of all time. I just wish he would get in the ring and fight some people. I mean, this exhibition stuff for pay-per-view, for him to cash in on big paydays, I'm a little tired of that.
Tony, what do you think? Do you care about Floyd Mayweather anymore?
I care about him in the sense that, you know, he's, like Chris said, he's one of the greatest to ever do it. Am I interested in the little quote-unquote little boxing exhibition?
Yeah.
No, not really. If it's boxing, he's going to absolutely devour this guy. It doesn't matter. So.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
Number three.
The fallout over the Chiefs game continues after the game was moved back to the Coliseum in Los Angeles from Estadio Azteca in Mexico City because of playing surface issues. Well, Mexican citizens are pretty upset. Former NFL kicker Raul Alegre, a Mexico native, said to the AP, quote, I feel devastated, angered, and ashamed, all of that together. I'm still trying to figure out how small minds were so irresponsible in the preparations for a game of this magnitude. I know that the world does not revolve around the NFL, but this is a great event not only for the sport, but for the country, and it is inconceivable how it was taken so lightly, end quote. So, Tony, do you think the NFL is going to think twice about doing these games in places other than London?
Yeah, because this is not only an embarrassment, as you heard Raul Alegre say, for their country being out there, it's also an embarrassment for the NFL because they're equal parts in this. So they're going to probably, well, you know what, it's the NFL. Maybe they don't pay much attention to what's going on, but they should. Wherever they're going from here on out, they need to make sure that wherever they're playing, that they're taking care of the field prior to the week that they're actually going to be there. Because if not, you're going to have these type of bad, you know, publicity moving forward.
Chris?
Yes, it's a lot of this is the NFL's fault. This is a huge black eye in the league. I mentioned that yesterday. But I think the people at Stadium Azteca have
Estadio
to take
Azteca.
A little bit of them. Yes, I think they have to take a little bit of the blame as well. I mean, look, they knew an NFL game was coming up. You got to keep the field in good shape. You can't control the rain, I understand that, but you can certainly control how many concerts you schedule there. You can control how many soccer matches are played there. If this really means everything to you, which is, you know, what the people of Mexico, a lot of them are saying, then I think you do everything to make sure that the event goes off as planned.
Absolutely.
So, whereas the NFL gets a black eye here, Mexico, unfortunately, deserves a little of the blame.
Number two.
If you guys haven't heard, we've teased it a little bit before about ketchup was going to be talked about in this.
Where is this going?
This ties into Mr. Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs quarterback, and he has an interesting way of eating a steak. He says that he loves to put ketchup all over his steak, and if he has mac and cheese, he'll mix that in too. So, personally, I like the mac and cheese and ketchup, but the steak and ketchup is a little weird. But here is Patrick Mahomes describing to the media about his love for ketchup.
It's crazy. I mean, social media, it can blow anything up. And so I'm a big ketchup fan. I've always been a little bit more when I was younger. I mean, it is crazy how social media blows things up these days.
Would you like ketchup for life? I mean,
I'm not opposed to it. So, I mean, if it happens and I get ketchup for life, I'll be sure to share it with some of the offensive linemen.
So that was him talking about ketchup in a very important press conference. And you kind of caught at the end there, she said, ketchup for life, because Patrick Mahomes' love for ketchup has prompted Hines to present the Kansas City Chiefs quarterback with some added motivation for the final six games of the year. They said that if he gets to 57 touchdown passes on the year because of Hines 57, they will give him ketchup for life. He currently has 31, and he needs 26 more. That means he needs to average 4.33 touchdowns a game for the remaining six games of the year. So, Chris, you're up first. Does he get to 57 touchdowns and free ketchup for life?
Don't care, but I do think that it's a brilliant, brilliant marketing move by Hines. I mean, to take advantage of this opportunity and get your product name out there. I could care less whether Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure he can afford as much ketchup as he's ever going to need. Now, the reason that I find it interesting that he likes ketchup on his steak is that he's in Kansas City. Does he understand that Kansas City has
blasphemy.
Some of the best steak in the entire planet? I mean, I've been all over the world, and wherever I've gone, I've eaten steak. And Kansas City would be my number one choice for where the best steak is. So
wow.
It really is blasphemous to put ketchup on your steak in that particular city.
Tony, what do you think?
I can relate to Patrick a little bit.
But officially, Chris, you said no, he's not getting to 57 touchdowns. Okay.
That's Tony. Officially no. I can relate to Patrick Mahomes a little bit. I was a kid that liked to put ketchup on my steak when I was younger, but then I started going to, you know, better steak places, and you realize, oh, you're not supposed to really put ketchup on steak after a while. So I can relate a little bit, but does he get to 57? I'm going to say yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to say yeah.
That's a lot of touchdowns.
It is a lot of touchdowns, but he likes ketchup, so he's trying to get that ketchup for life deal.
Isn't that record 50 right now?
No, I think it's more because Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I think it's 55.
55.
Will's going to look this up. He actually just typed 55, of course. Our encyclopedia
out there. Our encyclopedia is on it.
I really like ketchup too, but not that much.
Me neither.
Number one.
After Blake Snell won the AL Cy Young Award yesterday, Justin Verlander's wife, Kate Upton, has some things to say on Twitter. Upton says she, quote, won't be going to Tampa anytime soon. She then added, quote, Justin wants everyone to know that I'm joking. She has been pretty...
I wonder what happened there.
Yeah, someone got a little text message, a phone call, or conversation. She has been pretty vocal on Twitter for the last couple years, and some people are fans of her candid tweets about what's going on in the world of baseball. But, Tony, I had you do this one first because you were a professional baseball player with a spouse. Do you think spouses commenting on their husbands or wives in sports puts more pressure on the athlete?
It can. It can, especially nowadays with social media. That's usually where the commenting is taking place. Listen, I grew up with a mom that didn't really bite her tongue. If she felt like saying something, she said something. So I come from a place like that, so it doesn't bother me. It didn't bother me when my wife made comments at all. But I think you just have to be aware, if you are the spouse, that those comments could end up coming back and putting more pressure on your husband.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Has anybody seen Kate Upton lately?
Yeah, she just had a baby.
All right. She looks fabulous. Always.
I don't think that's where you're going.
No, where I'm going is the fact that Kate Upton can get away with it, maybe where some other people can't get away with
Touché.
It. I just think we don't really mind. I mean, it's funny. I think we get where Kate Upton is coming from on this particular comment. I think she obviously wants her husband to win the Cy Young Award. He didn't. She's got a pretty big base of fans, followers, so when she speaks out, it's going to get heard. So I guess there's, you know, when you give it the old, there shouldn't be different rules for different people. That's true, but the fact of the matter is there is different rules for different people. So I don't really mind Kate Upton. She can pretty much tweet anything she likes. Normally, if she attaches a photo, I'm more likely to read it.
I think that's mostly everybody.
Oh, that's not where I thought you were going.
That's all.
Devil horns in the air.
Gwynn and
good
Chris
big five.
97.3, The Fan. start or sit, add or drop.
So this is football. I like it.
Don't sleep on these sleepers.
Football rules.
Because right now, lead fantasy analyst for Bleacher Report, Matt Kemp, gives you the latest on fantasy football heading into the weekend.
Are you ready for some football?
On 97.3 The Fan.
And indeed, with Gwen and Chris, Matt Kemp joins us. Time to talk a little fantasy football. Matt, how you doing?
Well, very good, guys. I was just shoveling my yard and my walkway. It's still in far better condition than the conditions in Mexico. So if the Rams want to play here, they're more than welcome to.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that your grass is probably a little bit better than what we saw out in Mexico there. Let's get right to it, Matt. The Seahawks, they have an interesting backfield right now. Carson's supposed to play tonight. Rashad Penny has the big game last week. Who should people be starting tonight?
I'm going to lean towards Carson, but I can't do so with a ton of confidence. I mean, if there's no issue here with him and he's been playing the last couple weeks, I'd probably tell you he's a locked-in top 15 running back, and you go forward and you play him confidently tonight against the Packers. But over the last three games, they've had three different players lead the team in rushing. And this is the team that is the number one now rush volume offense in the NFL. They run it more than anybody else per game. And now they have the best rushing offense. So you know if you get the right piece of this Seattle backfield, or even pieces, you're going to get fantasy production. But we saw Penny have the big game last week. He kind of disappeared for a little while, and then they went back to Davis and back to Penny. But we've seen Chris Carson be the guy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and say, look, they made a point to hold him out this past weekend, knowing they had a short week and a big game coming up against Green Bay. They wanted to make sure they wouldn't lose him for two games. So he's out there on tonight, Thursday night football. The matchup doesn't really scare me off. They're going to run the ball. And he went through full practice this week. And the last time he missed a game, Mike Davis was the man. And the next week back out there, it was Carson again. So I have to defer to Carson, but I put him at like 20 instead of 14 or 15, and I think you're kind of taking a shot in the dark on the other two guys as potential flex options.
Matt, let's take a look at the other side of the game tonight, Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. It's interesting how people react to one game, but Jones went off last week, had a huge game against Miami. Aaron Rodgers does not have all of the same weapons this year that he's had in past years, and you get the feeling that people, it's not that you're down on Aaron Rodgers, but he's not being rated as highly as he once was. Is that true?
I think that's, you know, what we saw last week was something I feel like the Packers needed to do. They controlled the game against the Miami Dolphins. It was a game that they should have won, and Rodgers only had to throw the ball 28 times. He didn't even have 200 yards. He threw a couple touchdowns. They both went to Devontae Adams. But I think that was a game that the team needed where, hey, we've got this talented young running back. We've kind of inched a little bit closer and closer to making him the guy. And last week really cemented that, and Jones took the carries that he got, and he has gotten a career high, a season high in carries last week at 15, but each week that number has risen, and he's put Jamal Williams further and further in the rearview mirror, and obviously Ty Montgomery being gone. So it showed that, hey, you know, we don't just have to be a one-dimensional team. No one's going to tell you any different that they're not a creative team, because they have not been, and you can look around the league and see how teams are getting a lot more out of less talent than the Packers do, but Rodgers always kind of bails them out. But last week, it was a game I think they needed. So, you know, there wasn't the volume there. I think it'll be back this week against Seattle in tonight's game, and Adams will be okay, and I still feel good about Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Jimmy Graham will be fine, but I agree. They're not as loaded as they once were, so it would be smart to kind of stick with Jones playing a prominent role, and I think he could be a top 15 back again this week.
Matt Kemp joins us here on Gwen and Chris, lead fantasy analyst for Bleacher Report. Matt, Baltimore's quarterback situation. Obviously, Flacco is nursing a hip injury. Lamar Jackson has been the backup quarterback today. Only RG3 took snaps. What are you thinking about that quarterback situation?
Well, it sounded like Flacco was always a long shot, and I know they said he doesn't have to practice. Well, no Lamar Jackson. He had a stomach ailment today. Take that for what you want to. But the bottom line is he doesn't practice on a Thursday before what potentially could be his first start. And if you're going to miss any practice time before your first start, I don't think you're going to be out there. So my guess is RG3 is going to start this game against the Bengals, which is not a bad matchup. It's just a little frustrating for fantasy if we're maybe going to the third guy on the depth chart. And then on top of that,
you know, do we still see a little bit of Lamar Jackson? Even, you know, if he gets back to practice tomorrow, I think that's a possibility. So it's kind of a big annoyance for fantasy because the matchup is so good. Cincinnati's got one of the worst defenses in the league. So, you know, I want to be high on John Brown bouncing back, and you take a shot on Willie Snead, but it's hard to get super high on these guys when we don't know which of the three quarterbacks is going to start that game.
Let's go to the big game on Monday night, and we already talked about its move to Los Angeles, and let's talk about the Rams losing Cooper Kupp and what that means for Brandon Cooks and for Robert Woods. It seems like on the surface that automatically both of those guys get a whole lot more targets, but every now and again in fantasy football, just when you think you've got it all figured out, the game plan changes and they do something different that you don't expect. Is this really good for Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods owners right now?
I think Woods gets the bigger bump because I think he's going to kick inside and play in the slot, and then you'll where Kupp was playing, and then you'll have Josh Reynolds playing on the outside with Cooks. I mean, no doubt there's more targets to be had. Kupp had 55 on the season. That's a pretty big number considering he, by the way, missed basically three games. So he was right there. All these guys were all pretty close in targets on a per-game basis. The problem for me is where does this go if it's not Woods or Cooks? Is it Reynolds? Is it the tight ends, Everett and Higbee? Because before the injury for Kupp, this was a very well-defined team for fantasy. It was Woods, it was Cooks, it was Kupp, it was Todd Gurley. We knew we were getting the fantasy production, and we didn't have to worry about, you know, a random guy scoring. Well, last week, Everett scores a touchdown. Higbee scores a touchdown. We've seen Reynolds score before in Kupp's absence. So I don't know if there's one guy that really gets to replace Cooper Kupp, but from a target standpoint, I think Robert Woods is the biggest beneficiary, although you're certainly feeling good about Cooks and Woods going forward. Both guys, minimum top 15 wide receivers. They could be both top 12 wide receivers, including on Monday night against the Chiefs.
Matt, a few weeks ago, Golden Tate gets shipped away to Philly. At this point, is there anybody you can trust offensively for Detroit fantasy-wise?
I'm going to say that maybe Kenny Golladay could be busy this weekend because you mentioned Golden Tate is gone. Marvin Jones not looking like he's going to play this week with the knee injury, so that's a lot of targets that are going to disappear in a couple of weeks here for Detroit coming into this game, and I think they all fall to Golladay. Now, I will say this. I was happy to see Kerryon Johnson still come through last week. It was garbage time production, but the Lions being smart enough to involve him as a receiver, even when they're playing from behind. Now, I'll give you one name you may be able to pick up right now and play this weekend if you're stuck with the bye weeks or injuries. Theo Riddick is the primary pass catcher out of the backfield. And if Marvin Jones is out, there are still a lot of targets to be had there. And he's always going to be in there because when they play from behind, that's who they go with. So he could be somebody that you plug and play this week as an RB3 or a flex. But this could be a very busy weekend for Kenny Golladay if Marvin Jones is out again.
This is such a tough week for a lot of fantasy owners. I mean, six teams are off, and that's a lot of players on bye. And you're starting to get to that point in the season, your fantasy season, where you have to win. Like, you can't just kind of kick a game away at this point. So it's great advice, I mean, to try and maybe a Theo Riddick, maybe somebody like that saves the day. I'm wondering how many people are excited about Brandon Marshall in New Orleans. I don't think as many people are as excited about him as they were about Dez Bryant, but he's basically being brought there to fill the same role that Dez Bryant was going to, yes?
Yes, and I don't think it's much of a role. I didn't think it was much of a role for Dez, and Marshall couldn't get anything going in Seattle. So I don't have a lot of confidence in Marshall being anything. I do kind of like Traquan Smith this week against the Eagles because of their secondary issues. I know everybody's talking about the Rams and the Chiefs scoring a bunch of points, and I think they will. But I think there could be a lot of points scored between the Saints and the Eagles as well. Both teams have beatable defenses, especially the Eagles on the back end with all their injury woes, Mills and Darby being banged up there. So Traquan Smith, once again, you're looking deep, you're reaching for a sleeper. He might be a name to take a look at. I don't really feel much about Brandon Marshall. I always felt that Dez was going to be more of a luxury to that team anyway. You know, they're a middle-of-the-pack team in terms of pass attempts per game, but they're a top-10 team in rushing attempts. And once again, there's a team that is pretty well-defined. Kamara, Ingram, Michael Thomas, that's where the majority of the fantasy production comes from, and obviously Drew Brees as well.
As always, Matt, we appreciate your expertise on the fantasy tip, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, guys, thanks a lot. Good luck.
Take care, Matt.
Great stuff, Matt.
See ya.